I'd like to call the meeting of the Minlar Steering Committee to order for Wednesday, September 26th. Welcome, everyone. Glad you're here. We have a very full agenda today, a number of presentations. We'll try to stay to a reasonable schedule. If you're looking at the agenda, we're actually going to delay the presentation by the Office of the Legislative Auditor into later in the agenda than it is listed. We'll get through all of the department updates first before we take the Legislative Auditor's report. So otherwise, we are going to abide by the agenda. And first up is a presentation by a minute of the Minlar Steering Committee report dated September 11th. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Joanna Clyborn, Commissioner of Information Technology Services for the State of Minnesota.
Cassandra O'Hearn, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Public Safety.
So I want to thank the members for the opportunity to provide opening remarks this morning. Before jumping into today's agenda, however, I want to say a few words about the upcoming Real ID launch. The new driver system, which will be live on October 1st, which is this coming Monday. Right now, we have DVS, Minute, and Fast Enterprises working together over the last 10 months to implement this new system. We have done everything in our power to ensure this launch is successful. We have conducted statewide demonstrations with the system, held two-day classes, training from FAST and DVS subject matter experts, and held a month-long sandbox training period for all driver's license agents to practice in the new system. We've also conducted twice-weekly conference calls with agents to ensure that we are addressing all concerns and questions. DVS has sent weekly communications to the public over the last month, letting everyone know that they don't need a real ID yet. And they've also delivered materials to agents across the state to post in their offices for their customers. Driver's license agents will test the transactions with us this weekend in order to affirm that the system is ready to go. Once live, an incredible, robust support network for all driver's license agents will be available. This includes any issue tracking with the system, exam station supervisor support across the state, as well as FAST and DVS employees deployed to the offices in the field who might need extra assistance. New system launches inevitably have hiccups, but I have confidence in all the work that we have done leading up to October 1st and our ability to provide the necessary support to driver's license agents and Minnesotans who need it. I also want to touch on several items today's agenda at a high level. And our staff, of course, are present to dig into the details as needed. As outlined in the most recent quarterly report, we had two successful software releases at the end of June and again at the end of July. Among other items, these releases improved office closeout processes for deputy registers, reduced the incidences of pending cart transactions, and provided registrars the ability to process duplicate titles in their offices. Since the 1.13 release at the end of July, deputy registers have successfully processed over 15,870 duplicate titles. We're also looking forward to the releases of 1.14 and 1.15, which will occur between now and February 2019. I know that there has been a lot of frustration with the rate in which these releases have occurred. I would have liked to seen these releases occur at a much sooner pace. Unfortunately, the resources available do not allow for an expedited pace. That said, these two releases will deliver on nearly 50% of the stakeholder top priorities, meaning stakeholders had an input about what was important in getting things done. These priorities included changing of class conversions, the ability to attach work tickets to problem transactions, and refund enhancements to entities like auto dealers. We will also be able to deliver the ability to transfer specialty plates in the 1.15 release. Unfortunately, without the adequate resources that we had requested during last session, I had limited options to keep things moving forward. And so rather doing a full shutdown, we were able to restructure the current schedule of deliverables and payments with Fast Enterprises for the driver's license system. And while we've worked hard to maximize the $9.6 million appropriated for MNLARS in March of this past year, this amount is not sufficient to enable the work to continue through the end of the fiscal year unless some action is taken. We are currently in discussions with Fast Enterprise to change the payments and deliverable structure of their work on phase two of the driver's license system after phase one launches in October with the ability to issue those real IDs. Again, this restructure does not affect our rollout of real ID. While not yet complete, those discussions with FAST have been productive, and I am sure that I will inform you once they come to a conclusion. Also, as part of our effort to maximize the value of the March appropriation, we are formally requesting that this committee approve a transfer that would free up $93,000 from the technology cost portion of the riders to use in covering MNLARS contractor costs. I am asking this committee's vote today in concurrence of that transfer. Ms. Joan Redwing can provide additional details on how the actual costs differed from the budgeted costs, but I want to stress the importance of this kind of flexibility as we work to improve the system with the resources that we currently have available. And as we all know, however, these resources will run out, and they will run out before the conclusion of the 2019 legislative session. I cannot predict how the new governor will address the remaining needs for the MNLARS and FAST systems. But what I can tell you is that I will be advocating for an action that avoids a ramp down of the MNLARS contractor team, fully funds phase two work on the driver system, and provides an ongoing source of funding for operations and maintenance. The knowledge lost and the disruption that would occur as a result of a full ramp down would be significant. We've experienced this once before and the delays that resulted in it. I do not hope to repeat that again. It would ultimately add months to the timeline and ultimate completion of the project and the decommissioning of the legacy mainframe system. My understanding is that the OLA accuracy report will be discussed later in the hearing, as I heard, and an opportunity will be provided at that time to respond from the agencies. So I will hold those remarks unless, Mr. Chair, you wish otherwise.
No, that'll be fine. You can wait on that. I think before you proceed, since you opened with Real ID, I think perhaps, and I don't believe it's on our agenda today, I think we should probably see if members have questions regarding Real ID for you right now. I guess we're all concerned about the rollout. As we all remember, our last experience with a system rollout was less than pleasant, and we're still waiting to get to where we thought we were going to be over a year ago. And while we're very pleased that you're making progress with these releases, improving the MNLARS system and making it work better, it's all too late, frankly. We've delayed this well beyond any reasonable date, and I don't think we should forget that. We're happy with your work. We're glad you're working on it, but this has taken too long, and it's very frustrating. Members, I just wanted to open this up. If you have any questions about Real ID, since it was not on the agenda, we have a non-member question from our guest, Representative Rick Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. Commissioner Clyburn, my question's on Real ID, on what the proposed transfer effect would be if we authorize, I'm using we here broadly, but if the transfer for the second year of the contract for Real ID goes through, that $5 million, what does that mean for Real ID implementation in the out year? So beyond October 1, but going into the next, what are the consequences for Real ID, for transferring the Real ID money into keeping MNLARS updates going?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I think we're confusing two issues. The rider transfer that I'm asking for is within the fund technology costs within the purview of this commission. The restructuring of the $5.5 million would delay the phase two portion of the Real ID project, which is systems enhancements, some maintenance stuff, some back-end stuff that would not affect some interactions with some court systems, those types of things that are not part of the current phase one. It would not affect the rollout of Real ID or the ability of our citizens to get a Real ID compliant card.
A follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that I was asking about the second part with the phase two. What does that mean for Minnesotans on a practical level? And then what does it mean in terms of cost if we have to restructure that and at some point go to phase two? Will that have to be rebid? Well, there's an additional, likely the cost goes up. Just I'm looking for the practical impact of delaying phase two and what that means in terms of for a future legislature having to deal with that cost.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, it means in the next budgeting request there will need to be an allocation for 5.5 in order for phase two to occur in the Real ID. I do not presume to speak for the legislature, so I don't know where they are going to go, nor do I know what a new governor chooses to recommend within their purview. I do know that that will be a request, and I'm committed to asking for those funds, but I'm stuck in a rock in a hard place. Either shut a system down right now that is causing and has caused our citizens pain, or restructure the funds that I have available right now in order to ensure I can meet the obligations that I have due right now, and beg basically the legislature and the incoming governor to allow a 5.5 for phase two in the new year.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. Before I go to Representative Baker, I would like you to describe the impact on deputy registrars of the Real ID rollout.
Do you want to take that or should I, Dana?
Workload, reimbursement, those sorts of issues.
Dana, take that?
Is it on our agenda later? I don't see it.
Yeah, so the Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Cassandra O'Hearn, reason I'm struggling was with the scope of the question as far as the impact. So driver's license agents have been required by statute to undergo background checks in order to have the capability of issuing Real ID and enhanced driver's license. That's
on our agenda. We'll talk about
that. Okay,
but
that is an impact to them.
I understand.
Right, and the training needs have been an impact to them as well. So as far as, and I know that many deputies are here and will probably provide additional impacts and as well. There is a pre-application process that has been built by Fast Enterprises so that an individual can complete most of their driver's application before they ever get to a deputy registrar. That will reduce the amount of data input because that will already be in the system. So when the individual comes in with their pre-application confirmation, they will be able, the driver's license agent will be able to enter that, pull up that pre-application that will have all the information already inputted, except for some clicks. We saw a demonstration at last week's MDRA conference, and so most things are either, you know, clicks or yes or no checkbox moving through the system if somebody completes that pre-application process.
And what sort of revenue do the deputy registrars receive for the work on Real ID applications?
The same that they receive for any other type of driver's license. The fees are all identified in statute, but there isn't a different fee for their work as a result of Real ID or enhanced or a standard driver's license.
Thank you. Representative Baker has a question.
Mr. Chair, members, and Commissioner, I think as mentioned earlier, I think we all have a bit of anticipation for Monday. We think it's going to be better than it was, but we still have a lot of heartburn not knowing the what if. So what if things don't go as well as we hope? And the deputy registers, like they did with Minlars, were kind of sending letters and screaming to say, whoa, 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 wait a minute here. And I think from my standpoint in my district and what I'm hearing around the state, the deputy registers are the ears on the ground. They know better what's working and what is not. Is there a ramp off that you have? If there has to be a timeout, what is the plan with this? Because we never were allowed that with the Minlars rollout. It just kept going. The e-support system was basically shut down right away, and we couldn't go back. And I'm not even saying we're going back to anything, because this is different. But what is the plan of the what if? And I'm hoping to make sure that if is there a mechanism, is it the executive steering committee that has been meeting to say they have the ability to raise the flag to say, stop this for a minute. We got to relook at this. What is the plan there, Commissioner, with the what if something from the deputy registers are saying this is a red light?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, excellent questions. So unlike Minlars, there's a rollback plan. There is what I call battle drills, if this, then that. There is a process flow of what to do in the event that we receive any calls. On Sunday, we have two deputy registers who will give us the thumbs up that we're ready to go live on Monday morning. There's an entire team that will be processing transactions through each of the data conversions on Saturday and Sunday. It will be a long weekend for all of our staff. Come Monday when we go live, assuming everything goes well and we have the go live vote on Sunday, and right now I'm not seeing any indication that we would not be going live. If there are any issues, we have the ability to roll back. So the first 3 days of operation are very telling to us, and we are able to triage the in-the-field deputies. We'll be able to call in if there are any problems. They have already been briefed on the triage process. There is a weekly ESC meeting that has been meeting. There's comms that are going back and forth. Additionally, with the rollback process, we also are monitoring various what we call indicators. Things like how long is it taking within the office to process? How long are the transactions? Are there any spikes in the demand on the system? Those types of things. The Fast Enterprises has folks standing by and an entire army waiting in case something goes wrong. We have DPS and Minutes staff that are poised to go out wherever we need them to within the state. We have regional areas where, unlike Minlars, where if there was an issue, we had to send someone from St. Paul to Bemidji. We now have people within region areas that will be able to respond and assist within each of those areas. Wow. Nothing goes 100%, but I feel like we are in, and feelings are, you know, we need words and actions, right? I feel like we are in 1,000 degree difference of where we were with Minlars in July of last year.
Thank you.
Senator Jasinski, sorry about that.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. So one kind of a technical question. I stopped in one of my deputy registrar's offices, and when you get a new driver's license, now you get a two-page, and I'm sorry I was going to bring it today, but I forgot, a two-page form. One is a yellow, one is a white. You fill it out. The deputy registrar goes through. They give you the yellow copy. You take your license. To my understanding, those forms are going to go away, and the deputy registrars are now going to have to print those forms on their own, or some type of a receipt or some type of a page after that. So my concern is we've already put stress on our deputy registers. They're doing more input work, and now we're making them pay for the paper, the toner, the cartridges, all those things that they were not paying for. And I just want to make sure that's correct. I mean, we're killing these deputy registers, and we keep putting more work on them and more costs, and they get paid the same transaction fee, and that's my concern.
Commissioner. Or Ms. Oliver.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think I can respond to this, and if not, Don Olson will come and correct me. But my understanding is there are two different ways with respect to that form. One is that pre-application mm-hmm. that I just spoke about, and hopefully that will be widely communicated, and a lot of work can be done by the, you know, by the customer before they ever come in, and the it works on mobile devices and all of that. But with respect to walking out the door with a receipt, whether you do the pre-application or you come forward and the information is provided to the deputy to enter that data, it is true that they do need to print that receipt. That receipt is different in the FAST driver services system because it contains a photo image on it. So that receipt, you know, if you recall that yellow slip that you get, right, and you need to fold it all up and keep it, but it does not have your picture on it. So its usefulness is limited. But now you will have all the information on that receipt. But it is true that the deputy will need to print that out.
And again, Mr. Chair, that is my concern. We keep putting more and more pressure on these deputy registers, toner cartridges, paper, all these things, printers that they're not having to do now. And we keep pushing more and more pressure on them. We tried to get them funded some relief last year. That didn't work. They're struggling, and we keep putting more pressure on them. And we cannot do that. We have to stop. These small businesses are going to go under. We have 174 offices. They're going to start going under when we keep making them do these things. I just, it drives me crazy. And I'm sure there's more and more people upset about it, but we have to stop putting the pressure on these deputy registers like this. To take away these forms and make them absorb that cost is just one more stake in the dagger in the coffin that we cannot do. I'm very concerned about it.
A follow-up to his remarks. Does this affect all driver's license applications or just Real ID applications?
Mr. Chair, members, this affects all driver's license applications and identification cards.
So this the FAST, we hired FAST to do more than Real ID, apparently.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, that has always been the that FAST is building and has built and will be rolling out the entire driver services system. That includes regular, you know, standard driver's license, enhanced driver's license, and Real ID.
Well, thank you for that. I apologize for my own misremembering that. But this will have a fairly significant impact on these offices. And it comes to my mind that not everyone is as comfortable with technology as some people are. And this pre-application process, while it may be very handy and easily adopted by a percentage of our people that are seeking driver's licenses, there certainly are those who are not, do not have access to or are not comfortable with this technology. And so describe for me what happens if you don't do the pre-application. What does a deputy registrar have to do for those people?
The deputy registrar is going to have to input the information from the application into the system. My understanding is that is what they've had to do currently anyway. So you complete that paper application form, but the deputy registrar had to get that information into the system. So the driver services, FAST driver services system, that same process occurs. So that happens. It's just if somebody uses the pre-app, it's already there. If it's not and they complete the information, they get that directly from the customer and they input that information.
Well, thank you for that. But certainly there's more information required for a Real ID than a regular driver's license. Is that not the case?
There is more documents that need to be reviewed, but not necessarily additional information. So a deputy registrar, a standard driver's license, you have not had to show proof of your residence. You just wrote down, this is my address, and that was the address that was given to you. With a real identification, there are different requirements for the documents that need to be reviewed, including two types of documentation to prove your residence. That is new information that the customer has to bring, and the driver's license agents have been trained to accept information, to review it, make sure it's the right type of information, but they're not entering that information into the system. They are accepting it. They are reviewing it to ensure it is accurate documentation.
So there's no scanning of that information. It's just somebody looks at it, verifies it, and then they go on with the procedure. Is that the way it's going to work?
So at this time, the same process as has occurred in the legacy system is that information will be provided and sent to DVS as they do today. There's a pilot program around scanning because many of the deputy offices have raised concerns about not wanting to maintain and hold on to these records and being responsible for the security of them. So there is scanning capability that is being at their request and with the work of the Executive Steering Committee. And there are some offices that are going to test out a scanning function because then they could scan that information and they would then not have to maintain copies in their offices. But at this time, that is not a statewide and is being rolled out with the deputies.
So allow me to backtrack. So if someone comes in for a real ID, the other difference between real ID and a regular driver's license is that they have to submit these documents, and the deputy registrar has to file them if they can't scan them. Is that correct?
My understanding is that with standard driver's licenses and with EDLs, that is currently what happens. Yeah.
So
now
they're doing that now?
If
I come in to renew my regular driver's license, I have to bring proof of residence and they have to file it?
You do not need to bring proof of residence today, but if you decided to change your name, for instance, or the other documentation, the identity documentation. So for a person who just passes their driver's test, they need to bring in various different documents to prove their identity today. Those information is copied by the deputy today and submitted to DVS today. They mail them. That is the process that has happened in the current system and will continue into the new system as well.
Well, we spent already much more time on this than we had allocated for today. We trust that you are sensitive not only to the needs of our citizens and their efforts to get these real IDs, but also sensitive to the needs of our deputy registrars. We have another guest legislator here today. Senator Cornyn, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for allowing a non-member to ask the question as well. So you did a great job of describing, and it gets around to the impacts of the deputy registers and the process. Did a great job of describing what it will be. Can you please describe to us the additional time impact and labor resource impact on the deputy registers? Can you tell us what a driver's license renewal process looks like today under the current process? And then what's the current testing and also the forecasted length to process the three new transactions under the new system, the existing driver's license, the enhanced, as well as the real ID?
In 30 seconds or less.
Okay, In 30 seconds or less, I can respond that I do not believe that we have specific information about how long these transactions occur. What I can tell you is the FAST system does track that information, and they will be tracking it from the time that somebody starts working on the on an application until the end, and we are going to be looking and reviewing that data real time And FAST and DVS are going to use that information in case there are offices that are outside of kind of the norm as a way to go and help them. Once people get used to the system, because there will be some, you know, it's new, the screens look differently, but once people look at the system, the belief is that I believe the transactions will happen as quickly as they do for a standard. A real ID will probably may take a little longer because that's an additional documentation, and an enhanced driver's license takes longer because there is a requirement for an interview as part of the enhanced driver's license process.
Follow-up.
So I know I didn't answer to your specifics. We can get additional information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But you just described very lengthy process, and that we don't know exactly what it is today is unacceptable. You know what the process is today. We're going to roll this out, and we can't even forecast to our deputy registers the exact time frame. They don't make payroll decisions and staffing on beliefs. We are obligated to provide what the impacts to them are, and we should have that before it's rolled out. We can't hope it gets better. We should absolutely know what it is. So I would hope you would get that information extremely fast to the deputy register so they can plan. These are impactful to them. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a real quick comment on a follow-up on what Senator Jasinski was talking about is, you know, one of my fears has always been is that as a result of this very expensive new MNLARS program, we are simply looking at one aspect of the cost. And Senator Jasinski's concerns with respect to the registrars, I fully expect that we will have in the very near future registrars coming in and asking for a fee increase because of the additional workload that has been placed on them, and it's probably going to be a reasonable request. And it's going to be as a direct result of what is occurring with the MNLARS situation that's been going on for a number of years now. I really expect that we legislators are just seeing the tip of the iceberg as to what the cost of this ultimately is going to be, and it isn't going to be just the cost of the MNLARS program. We started this session or this segment talking about FAST and the real ID. So my question, Commissioner Clyburn, I'd like to go back to that. I will tell you that I am personally not in favor of raiding the FAST account to the tune of $5.5 million. There are some legislators that are very concerned about the fact that you're taking that money away from a program that we've now paid for, and you're going to use it to pay for a portion of a different program that, quite frankly, we did appropriate money for, but the governor vetoed it. And so it feels to me a little bit like you are exercising a veto override by taking money out of FAST and applying it to MNLARS. My question is, I assume that you have talked to Governor Dayton about this proposal of taking the $5.5 million. Am I correct that you have talked to him about it?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, yes, I did.
And what is Governor Dayton's feelings, and what did he tell you about this, given the fact that he vetoed the money that was to be spent on MNLARS?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, that was not part of the discussion. The money was allocated for MNLARS. Real ID was part of the original MNLARS umbrella. And so when I looked at how to manage the system, the concern became is I had two options. I had an option to try and figure out how I can continue to provide relief to the deputy registrars in the field, or because there's this thing called anti-deficiency, which means I cannot obligate against funds I do not have, I could shut down the entire system and ramp it down now, which means we will be sitting still until the next legislative session. Neither of those options really were great. And so I took the better of the two options, which is the funds within a project that have not started yet, in order to provide the 1.14 and 1.15 releases that the deputy registrars have told us repeatedly in the stakeholder engagements that they're high priority. So we listen to them in order to try and figure out how to get as much relief to them as possible.
Commissioner, I don't dispute that you are faced with a Hobson's choice here. And you are, in fact, between a rock and a hard place. The point of my question is that the legislature did appropriate the money that you're looking for, and the governor vetoed it. And we also appropriated money for Real ID, and now you're taking money from one pot, and it really does feel to me like you are overriding the governor's veto. That was his choice. And all of the problems of shutting down this program were present when he vetoed the MNLARS funding. And that was his choice. And so I just want you to understand that I do not agree with, even though it's a difficult choice, and believe me, I do understand the rock and hard place that you're behind. But that doesn't take away from the fact that immediately upon you taking $5.5 million away from FAST, we know that you're going to come back to or your agency is going to come back to the legislature next session and say, "Hey, we need $5.5 million for FAST because we are now short." Mm-hmm. And I just don't agree with the shifting of the money. I don't agree with the shifting of this money any more than I agreed with shifting money out of HUTDF in order to pay for the call centers. And I now see the state agency doing the same thing again. And in the For What It's Worth department, I don't agree.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to respond to the statement by Chair Newman that it was the governor's choice to veto the funding for MNLARS. It was. That is true. But it was also, I'd say the legislature has some responsibility for that veto because the governor was very clear the circumstances under which he would veto that appropriation, given its source and given the other policy elements that were attached to it. And the other atmospherics and the other things that was embedded with. So the legislature, when they chose to provide that funding and put that package on the governor's desk in the form that they did, already had all the information. They needed to know that that would draw his veto, and he vetoed that legislation as he had assured that he would. So it was everyone's choice.
Well, thank you for that, Senator Dibble. I'd also like to remind everyone that he vetoed a single item bill, too, that would have provided some relief for our deputy registrars because apparently it was too simple for him.
Mr. Chair, he was also very clear that the source of those funds were unacceptable and they would have simply done more harm to the agency's larger mission and efforts to rectify the problems with MNLARS. He communicated that clearly ahead of time as well.
Well, this is not listed as a debate today, so we'll leave it there, Senator.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that we're clear on one point. So the funds that are being reallocated are in the same money. It's the same pot of money. It's not. I just want to make clear.
Wait a minute, Commissioner. Which funds are we talking about now?
The 5.5. And so I just want to make sure that it's not a shifting from one account to another. It is the money that was allocated as part of MNLARS. So I'm not moving money around. I'm choosing where I'm spending that money.
Yes, but by spending that money, you will be unable to fulfill the FAST contract.
Phase two of the FAST contract.
That's all the same contract. It may have phases, but it is a contract.
It is.
A contract which I don't get me started. Let's move on. We have a lot of ground to cover. This we could spend another hour on this very easily. We're not going to because we have lots to do. We'll move on with the agenda. Committee report dated September 11th. Uh, Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation. I would appreciate anything you can do to abbreviate it and give us the most important information and not dwell on things that take too much time.
We will be fast, Mr. Chair. My name is Dana Bailey. I'm from Minute Services.
My name is Don Olson. I'm the Driver and Vehicle Services Division Director.
My name is Joan Redwing, and I am the interim CVTO of Minute at DPS.
Thank you. Welcome to committee.
So this is our usual status update for you all. This was what we submitted, a high-level overview of what we submitted on September 11th. It covers updates in the system, progress that has been made since we last met. It reports out on the 7 performance measures that are in statute. We talk a little bit about the budget and the ramp down timeline. And then if we have time at the end, we'd be glad to respond to members' questions. Since, as Commissioner Clyburn mentioned, since the 113 release at the end of July, deputies have successfully printed over 15,000 duplicate title copies. As part of what has now become our standard practice, we did the user acceptance testing protocol and also added 5 additional training sessions to that protocol to ensure that it was clear to deputies across the state how to process those duplicate titles in their offices. 113 also added the expedited title fee in support of deputy registrars processing these expedited titles. 2 releases are scheduled for mid-November and early February. These features and gap functionality and defect fixes, we are very happy to report, covers nearly 50% of the deputy registrar's priorities laid out for us in the reprioritization process. As I mentioned, this includes a mix of both defects, gap resolutions, and new features, including the ability to transfer specialty plates. And I am very happy to report that of the top 12 priorities set out for us by deputy registrars, we will be building in 10 of those priorities in those 2 releases. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Joan Redwing, now to go through the performance measures, the first set of performance measures.
Thank you. Ms. Redwing.
Mr. Chair and members, the performance measures of 1 and 2 talks about the gaps and defects that are remaining on the system. And we have a master list process that tracks known gaps and defects identified and prioritized by system stakeholders. We update this regularly from all of the issue intake. And as of September 1st, the list contained 138 items, down from 163 in June on the June 11th report, page 11 of the quarterly report, if everybody's following along. And of these, 46 are gaps, 70 are new are defects, and 22 are new feature requests. I'm heartened to see that the number of defects has gone down and the number of new features have grown. New feature requests have grown, which is usually an indicator that we are starting to turn the corner and within a few releases be able to focus on new feature requests and workflow optimizations. Level of effort of the items that we're tracking, we've tracking on the page 11 or so graph that we are coming very close to 350 fixes on very stable releases. The next performance measure, so that's gaps and defects. The next performance measure is 3, which is editing. Performance measure number 3. The June release provided administrative editing tools for deputy registered liaisons as a trial for editing capabilities and gave instructions to deputy registrars how to contact liaisons to do editing of transactions. And to date, the liaisons have edited 2,886 transactions using these new tools. We do have release 115. Which is coming up in early Feb, will have the capability for deputy registrars to submit a data correction ticket within MNLARS. So they won't have to go to another PC, send an email, or something like that, they'll be able to submit a data correction ticket from within MNLARS for the for title applications. Go ahead. Don Olson.
Good morning. On the title turnaround, our title work is measured by the number of days required to turn around a title application. Our goal of the MNLARS system and internally is that we would achieve less than 30 days for title applications. As of August, the title turnaround has improved significantly since the report that was last issued. To date, now out-of-state title transfers are at 29 days. Minnesota title transfers are at 14 days, and new car titles are at also 14 days. We continue to work with the continuous improvement experts at the Department of Administration. They are a partner to work with us to help look for ways to improve our process for the long term.
Great. Performance measure number 5, data errors. The motor vehicle transaction errors are fixed as they're identified by our and promoted to our data corrections team. And those data issues are reported by deputy registers, DPS, and the public. We also run a series of sweep programs to clean up data errors on a nightly basis. And to date, we've got about 0.25% of motor vehicle records have required some sort of data correction. And given additional funding, we have future plans in our roadmap that includes additional self-service editing capability for liaisons and deputy registrar to clean up any data errors. And this would continue to reduce errors in the system, especially for data entry errors. Performance measure number 6 is system performance. MNLARS vehicle and legacy systems have returned to 99% uptime. Approximately, we have 4 systems that we monitor under the umbrella of MNLARS at this point. One is DVS permits. The other one is e-support. The other one is still have some applications on legacy mainframe, and then we've got the new MNLARS system. So all 4 of those applications constitute what we are measuring. And we have limited the number of people that we have working on performance tuning, but we have stable performance between 112 and 113. And we continue to improve our monitoring and continue to evaluate system performance from release to release to ensure that we have no degradation.
This performance measure number 7 is customer service. Compared to the last report, the number of calls being accepted into the call center has increased. In January through March, we reported that 24.5% of the calls were accepted. In March through May, we reported 27.5% of accepted calls. And in this last quarter, we can report that 46% of calls have been accepted. The number of calls that are coming through and are being answered are directly related to the additional 26 temporary staff that we have hired. We also monitor emails, public emails that are coming in. During this quarter, we had more than 21,000 emails that were received, with 1,900 total unprocessed emails at the end of the quarter. Our turnaround time has improved since the June 11th report, and backlogs were eliminated on June 22nd, and turnaround time was within 10 business days at the end of the quarter. As well as we do with the title application process, we continue to work with continuous improvement experts at the Department of Administration to continue to look for ways to improve our process.
For our budget and ramp down timeline, we, you know, at the end of session, having received the 9.6, we needed to take a look at what we would be able to do with the money that we had. And so we, after finishing the reprioritization process with the deputy registrars and other stakeholders, we mapped out a plan to build those last 2 releases in, providing them with as much relief as possible, and in order to obtain enough money left over for a lights-on scenario, plus where the system will be maintained, there will be an occasional defect fix, but no additional features will be able to be built into the system. And our approach and timing of any future funding requests, of course, will be determined
later this year once the incoming governor has had a chance to have conversations with the commissioners of DPS and Minute. Be glad to respond to questions, chairs, and members.
Thank you. I do not see any questions at this time. So we have some items we've already covered. The shift of funding probably is the next thing. That is, I assume that's, we're talking about the shift now that's included in this cover letter, the $93,000. Who wants to give us, Commissioner, do you want to provide a little more detail on that before we proceed to a vote?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to jump to that.
Thank you. Welcome back, Ms. Redwing. We have received a cover letter from Minute regarding this shift. This oversight committee has some authorization provided to us in the manner in which it was established to monitor these funds that have been allocated within legislation. And my understanding is that you are requesting some changes. Will you please explain those to the members of the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, we have a process where we put together our budget by pulling together estimates and quotes from our various software partners and hardware partners, and they pull together quotes. We put that in our budget, but then when we get to the point of pulling the trigger and purchasing these, they go through a negotiation process. And that negotiation process often yields savings. And so when we look at our, also we pay by usage. So we do our best to estimate our usage for various services like identity and access management, which is your user ID and login. And very often, because we try to make sure that we have a thin margin overhead, just to make sure that we come in and that we don't have any unexpected spikes, often we come in lower on our usage. Kind of like your minutes on your cell phone, right? You never want to run out of minutes on your cell phone or run out of data on your cell phone. You want to get a little bit of a room, but you don't want to pay too much. So in the area of identity and access management, which is we came in under by $22,000, on the area of our hardware testing for switches and support, we came in under by $2,300 approximately. And under all of our contracts that we have with Captiva, SAN, Storage, Cisco, Splunk Enterprise Support, we came in, all of these all added up to being under budget for renewals by $68,000. And that came to the $93,000. That we would like to move to the contracting dollars. So the bills came in a little lower than we expected.
For the chairs and members' reference, this is on page 32 of the report.
So members, questions regarding this change within the allocated funds that were designated in statute? So before this meeting, this was described as money being saved on hardware that was then being allocated toward other work. But it doesn't, it sounds like it's more like it's savings on expenditures for computer time. Okay, just kind of go through it again for us, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, it's actually savings on hardware utilization, usage, like minutes on your phone. It's savings on that, and then it's also savings on switches and support, which is actually physical hardware, and then it's also some savings on software, when we come up to renewal periods, because we have to renew our licensing for hardware and software on a regular basis, and then we pay a utilization fee as well. And so as we renew these contracts on a regular basis, contracts folks do negotiation. So we put in what the vendor asks for, but when we actually pay the funds, there's usually a small savings.
Mm-hmm. So, and could you remind us how these numbers were established originally when this bill was passed?
Mr. Chair and members, this was pulled together originally by going out and getting quotes from our partners and doing a utilization projection, saying here's how much we think people are going to be using on identity and access management for the login, here's how much usage we think it's going to get, and then here is the quotes from the various vendors saying how much it's going to cost to renew these licenses.
So if I may not put words in your mouth, but you saved some money, you got better bids than you anticipated originally, so there's some surplus funds available in these particular accounts that if we do not make this change, what will happen to those funds?
Mr. Chair, we would not have anywhere to utilize them.
So those funds would be unspent and unutilized at this time. Senator Newman has a question.
If the funds are unspent, where do they go? I mean, they just lay in an account. You return them to the general fund. What happens to the $93,000 if we do not approve this shift?
Mr. Chair, this is a special revenue account, so I'm not sure that where it goes, so I will defer
to... Looks like we have a phone a friend coming on board, so please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with a response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is John Eichden. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Minnesota IT Services. It is a special revenue account. The stipulation in the bill that was passed in March was very explicit about could only be used for these purposes, so... I would imagine they would sit in the account until a relevant purpose for one of the systems that there's authorization for spending under the account, until a need comes up in the future. We can't say when that would be, a need that would align with the very strict stipulations that were put into the riders in the bill that was passed in March.
And Mr. Chair, I just want to make note that using this money to pay contracts will allow us to be fully operational until the end of February.
Thank you for that, Ms. Bailey. I'm going to take a 5 or so minute recess at this point in time, so this meeting is recessed.